All right, I'll just move in this direction. So first, I'm going to introduce Paul Barth. Come on, Paul.
Okay.
And all I really want to say is, what do I want to say about Paul?
I don't know.
Goodness gracious, this stuff. You got to be here.
Oh, that seat.
Yeah,
oh, sorry.
Yeah. This was Lisa's seat. This is now your seat.
Okay.
Paul is a non-standing elder at Grace Bible Church. He and Lisa have been here for a long time, and you can tell us the rest of your details.
I will.
But yeah, I love his kids. They're awesome. James Daniels, we're moving in this direction. Cardiologist, father of five.
It's like a definition.
You forgot the doctor.
Doctor MD.
Yeah.
He got his hair cut.
I did.
I know. I almost
he looks good.
So I
yeah,
can look pretty.
Yeah,
well,
you look good. Yeah. Yeah, right.
And he's on camera.
Yeah,
all
right.
Bruce Parker, another non-standing elder.
And sitting.
I'm just throwing in.
An elder, less professional.
You represent the church.
I think I'm making Lucas nervous already.
Yes, I think you are too.
Which is, don't enjoy it quite so much.
Yeah, it's all right,
going to be fine. And then Rob Marcello, who is claim to fame, is right. Rachel Marcello, who is the women's director here at Grace Bible Church.
So anyway, he's almost an elder because he's on staff.
Yeah.
Connected.
His wife
is on
marriage.
Staff.
And don't you have a PhD?
No. I was working on it for a while, but I quit.
Okay.
Oh.
He's too smart.
Thanks for bringing
that up. Doesn't need it.
I was waiting for our list.
All right, you guys have fun.
All right, are we? Yeah, we're rolling. We're good. Okay. Well, thank you all. I was nominated to be the moderator by my friend Bruce Parker, who, if any of you know, has a way of doing that. That was a couple of days ago. So I'll at least be managing the conversation as much as I can and asking some pointed questions, and then we'll see. But if you've got questions or want to interrupt, I'm all in. That's not a problem. So, okay, gentlemen, thanks. Thanks for being here. So I think first one, let me throw out a softball. Give everybody a background, right, of kind of your marriage life. How long have you been married? When did you start having kids? How many kids do you have? You know, just give them an understanding of your world. And just so you know, we're going to start marriage, and then we're going to move into fatherhood, right? So just give you guys an understanding. Rob, how about you? You go first.
Sure. Well, Rachel and I have been married since 2011. We waited 5 years before we had kids, and we have two kids now. One is four, our oldest, Nicholas, and the youngest is Elena, and she is two.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Or at least will be next month.
Okay. So you're still early days, under five.
Yes.
Right. Got it. Okay, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Parker. We've been married 26 years. We waited about 4 years to have kids, and we have four. So I'm in birthday season, so this I have to do math as I do this. Cameron is almost 22 and almost done with college. Kathleen is recently 19, and she's in her first year of college. Marguerite will be 16 in 4 days. And she is a sophomore in high school. And then Brendan is in 8th grade and will be 14 in another month or so.
Thank you.
So I made it.
You did.
Nice work.
Thank you.
James?
So we've been married since 2000. We snuck it in right before the new year so that all I had to remember was the last 2 years of the year. So we've been married coming up 20 years in December. We have five children. I like to say the first three are from my first marriage, 17, 14, and 13. And then the last two are from my current marriage. Stephanie doesn't think that's very funny. they're 4 and 11 months. So, had a little gap.
Okay. And, wow. It always blows my mind. And I'm Paul Barth. We've been married since 86, so it's about 33 years. We have four children, two boys, two girls. The boys are done. They're 26 and 24. Girls, I have a 21-year-old that's a senior in college and an 18-year-old who's a junior in high school. All right. Well, that's we got all sorts of right.
Good.
So this
that
is good.
Right.
We got that one. Yeah. So we're good. All right. So first question would be right. Let's talk about marriage. So we've got to think about it. It's taken a while. It's been a while. But do you think you were prepared for marriage, Why or why not? And were there certain things you did to prepare as a man or as a couple? And what would you have done differently to prepare? Bruce, let's start with you.
Oh, yeah, you said you were going to do that.
Well, I started with Rob. I'm just going around.
Okay. All right, fine. So we dated for 3.5 years, basically during college, all of Trisha's college and most of mine. We were engaged for 1.5 years of that. So prepared, I'm not even sure how you prepare for marriage, honestly. Ready? Absolutely. Very ready to be married by the time we were married. Being apart, because we went to 2 different colleges, about 1,000 miles apart, I think was a good, not at the time, but it was a good test. It was a good trial. We had to evaluate sort of constantly, is this worth it? It wasn't very pleasant. And as a result, I feel like that was a great way for us to test whether or not we could put up with all the stuff that marriage throws at you. I'm not sure it was a perfect test, right? Like I would say, oh, everybody should, you know, live 1,000 miles apart and date for years and years and be engaged for a long time and see how it works out. But I do think that it like set up the expectation that it's hard and you have to choose constantly and it's work. And those are themes that I think are good. And on the communications front, which is the other one everybody always says, I think my phone bills back, this is when we had phone bills. Well, most of some of you know about phone bills. Anyways, my phone bills regularly were over $1,000, which was a lot of money in the late 80s and early 90s. And so that also, like, you know, we paid to communicate, which was interesting too.
This is when you were at Penn State, right? Oh, sorry. I didn't mean that.
I went to a school that's called Penn and not Penn State. And I don't generally like to talk about the school. It doesn't matter. But Paul knows all of this. And so that was score one for Paul Barr. We'll work on that. We'll
see. So, James, how about you? Did you and Stephanie do anything together as a couple? Like, did you go to counseling? Did you go to anything like that? Or?
Well, we studied.
You studied?
Yeah, it was...
Oh, because you were both in...
Terribly romantic.
Oh.
In medical school, we studied a lot. But specifically right before we got married, we did do a... we did counseling with the pastor who was marrying us. We got married in Fort Worth at her parents' church. And also with... they had a kind of a brief program at the church we were attending at the time. Mm-hmm. So we did those two things. You know, I don't know, to be honest, how helpful those were.
Okay.
Because I still entered marriage with a very wrong view of what marriage is, a very worldly view.
Hold that thought, because we're going to get there.
And so it may have just been my heart was closed at the time, more so than those things were not helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if my heart had been more open, it would have been more helpful.
But. Okay. Yeah, I think Lisa and I, we did something similar, right? We did the church, you know, counseling with the pastor for a little. And then we also did, I think we did a Campus Crusade marriage thing. It's a long time ago. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's both kind of, right. How about you, Rob? What about you guys? Did you?
We had a professor of ours who did some marriage counseling.
Okay.
At the same time, walking into it with any type of expectation or understanding of what we were doing, no. But in particular, I grew up in a single mom family. Yeah. So the whole idea of what a husband is supposed to do or not supposed to do or try and figure out what to do, mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't have that. And so it was always watching other people and watching other people model mm-hmm. what it could be. And so having those conversations with him was in particularly interesting.
So when you kind of think about the early stages, right, mm-hmm. what lessons, you know, you talked about not having a father figure,
right?
I was kind of in a similar boat. But what lessons, looking back on it, now, you know, you've made the jump into marriage. What would you have done differently?
I think for us, I think it would have been good if we did not, we have been defined by being overcommitted in many ways in our life. And that's not really much different right now. But I think if we were to do it again, I think we would probably slow down a little bit more. And though we had 5 years without kids, we did not have that 5 years without school and without kids and without a lot of work. And so, yeah, it was without kids. But apart from that, I think it would have been good to slow down and just have some more time to invest in one another. I wish we would have had more time to do that. I think if we were to do it again, we would have slowed down a bit more in the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. How about you, James?
Well, I think kind of getting back to what I said earlier, I would have had worked harder to understand God's view of marriage better, because that has, I think, really changed our marriage tremendously. The other thing, I think I would have tried to be more humble earlier on, because, you know, we kind of looked around, again, kind of this worldly view. We looked around and thought, hey, we got it pretty good. You know, we're doing it right. And, I certainly was not. And so I think just having more humility about how I can be a better husband and better father, and making that more of a focus, as opposed to, well, what have you done for me lately, kind of a thing.
Right, right. So it sounds like as you went into marriage, right, your thought process was one way. Obviously, hers was something different, and maybe God's was something different. I mean, I'm not trying to put words in her mouth. I'm just saying in general, that's right. Okay. How about you, Bruce? Anything as you kind of think back on the early days of marriage?
Yeah, I'd echo both. We were very, very busy. We were busy with other people and less busy with just us. Part of that was probably good. I had a full household in terms of parenting, but not necessarily good examples, and sort of insidiously not good examples. So for me, I was fascinated by Trisha's family, which I just kind of put on this pedestal of, oh, wow, that's how you're supposed to do that. And it's sort of Norman Rockwell-ish, you know. Mm-hmm. Turns out, you know, you learn more, you learn more. But, figure out how do I say that? I think I said it all right. You guys get
that was
you
good.
Said it. Right. Yeah, we're moving on. So I think we spent a lot of time here at church, which was wonderful. We spent a lot of time with our family, which was wonderful. I spent a tremendous amount of time working, which I still do. And I think we could have just been still more and tried to know more. Know God, of course, and know each other more. And I don't know why, or I don't know what I was in the rush for, or what we were in the rush for. There really wasn't as much of a rush as it seemed like at the time there was.
Because the world says you're supposed to be in a rush, right?
I think part of it was that. I think it was also, there was a lot internal. Like, I would blame the world. Sure, the world's awful. Awesome. Careful. But I do think a big part of it were things that were inside of us, like maybe some people pleasing going on, you know, trying to earn people's respect, trying to do it the right way, trying to have other people say, oh, you're doing it the right way.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing, which is all nonsense.
And what about, I think of our early days, and one story I love to tell is that we had been married, you know, we dated for 5 years. Both are here in Dallas, both grew up here, went to high school together. Everything was here, right? This was our world. We both went to Denton, went to school, et cetera. We get married right out of school. A year into it, I'm basically told that if I'm going to keep my job, I transfer to Columbus, Ohio, right? That could have been Russia for all Lisa cared about, right? And I think about the communication aspect. You mentioned humility. You know, I basically came home and said, we're going to move to you know, Russia. What I said was Ohio, and what she heard was Russia. No. That didn't go over very well, right? Just because I came home and said, this is what we're going to do. And I think getting back to your point, James, is it wasn't, for me, it was like, well, this is what we have to do, right? This is our job. This is important. This is everything. So we're going to do this. I don't care. I mean, I didn't say that out loud, maybe, but yeah. Anyway, so I guess now looking back, really the best thing we ever did, I think we say that, right? It got us away. It helped us to begin to gravitate to one another. and rely on one another because we had the influence of family, which wasn't bad. It just was part of it, right? So for a couple of years, that was actually a really good thing. But I think back on it and go, ooh, I could have handled that a little bit better, right?
We had a similar experience. We got married right before we graduated medical school and then went to New Mexico for our residencies. And so all of our family was here. And so we went there for 4 years. And that was a great experience for our marriage early on, just to be able to, because we didn't have anybody else there. We had to rely on each other, like you say. And,
so, there's something to be said for that.
For sure.
Okay. So let's talk about fatherhood. Nasty little beggars, as I like to call them. Just kidding. All right. So, were you ready for fatherhood?
No.
That question probably should have been straight from that
one. Yeah. Just not ready at all. So what, I mean, I think the girls talked, the women talked about surprises and stuff. So what surprised you? I have two questions, right? Number one, did you prepare or how did you prepare, right? Any guidance out there for these guys that don't have kids yet, right? What do you recommend to prepare, or can they even prepare? And number two, what surprised you? For me, it was amazing what came out of the back end of those things.
Well, I
wasn't sure how you were going to finish that. I was
totally clueless. I'm the youngest child in my family. You know, I never babysat or anything. So I had no idea what I was getting in for. Didn't prepare at all because, I mean, why do I need to prepare?
It was the wife's problem, right? Hey.
Yeah. And so probably a good example of how clueless I was, Jake, our oldest, was about a month old, and I was changing his diaper, and I looked at her, and I was like, so we got about another month or two of this? And she just looked at me.
And you're a doctor, right?
Yeah, okay.
Just checking.
And she just started laughing. So I don't know. Looking back, I mean, it doesn't hurt to read some
books.
Parenting books, as far as like, this is what the kid's going to do and just sort of normal expectations. But yeah, I don't know if there's anything that you can really do to prepare to have children, to be honest.
We went to, all four of our children were born naturally, which is unbelievable, right?
Yes. Yes.
So we went to lots of classes, talked about a lot of stuff. I was sort of paying attention some of the time. So in terms of like the baby arrival process, I understood some of the mechanics. We had, well, we'd been practicing for several years, but anyways, we had a nephew, we had a niece. We've been around babies and little people and so on. And thoroughly, we're excited about that. I think the biggest surprise for me was how little it mattered where I was or what I was doing after our prince arrived, right? And the first kid owned the house, owned all of the oxygen, owned everything. And I was like, oh, I'm definitely in second chair here now. And you hear that, you understand that. It's sort of like probably not a big surprise to hear that. But it kind of caught me off guard. Sort of like, okay, yeah, this person is like a black hole of time and attention. And we're going to have to get over that, or, you know, I'm almost over it, but
almost.
It is a huge change. It's funny. I love when people who haven't had children ask my wife, which one, you know, we have four. So which one's the hardest and which is the toughest sequence? 0 to 1. Every time she always says the same thing. I always look, oh no. Right. Yeah. Going 0 to 1 is just, it's impossible to describe, I think. So I don't know how you prepare for that.
Okay. Rob, anything to add?
The only thing I would add is, for me, it took a little while before I felt bonded with our kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't expect that, because that's not what happened in the movies. And so
right. Sure.
You kind of just cry at the birth and you're happy and you love this kid and stuff. But that's wasn't my experience. It was a few months until there was some significant bonding going on, and like, I like this thing that has now taken over my entire life.
Yes.
And that took a while, but obviously I like them now. But I mean,
that's good. That's a good thing.
We're going to keep them.
Well,
but
well done. Well done.
Yeah, it took a while.
Very good plan.
Yeah, no, that is. All right. So our wives talked about stresses of being a mom, if you were paying attention a couple of weeks ago. And good thing that Lucas kind of gave us a little bit of recap, right?
The notes were helpful.
They talked about fear. Your
I missed that
fear.
Email.
You did, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Anyway,
okay.
Fear of failure. You know, did you going into this right? Were you or just not going into birthing because we didn't have much to do with that, but more of fatherhood, right? Raising kids, right? Challenge. Were you? It's similar to our wives, right? Were you concerned? Were you fearful? They talked a lot about the stress of raising children. Share with us anything there. I mean, what do you, any thoughts, any concerns when you got into this?
Well, I think Tricia mentioned, I'm sort of at war with this notion of expectations. So I like to come up with funny little things when I'm saying something harsh. Right nanigans is what I call it, which is this notion that there's a right way to raise kids. And I think that's part of where that fear comes from. It's like, oh, we're not doing what we should be. According to whom, right? Is it in the scriptures? Okay, well then let's talk about that. Is it about whether they go to private or public school? Well, that's very much not, well, it's in First Hezekiah or whatever, but it's not in the Bible as we accept it here. So, like, how are you going to deal with those expectations? What do other people get to say about what we're doing or not doing? Every single one of these kids is different. So to me, it's just sort of like blow up the notion of fair, blow up the notion of samesies for everybody. For me, actually, it gets me all, you know, fired up and kind of angry, actually. But right nanigans to me is this, you know, fear is something that's always negative. It's always darkness. It's always coming from the wrong place. And so this notion of fear to perform, fear of expectations, maybe even fear of missing out or whatever, for kids in particular, I think, has become almost an idol unto itself in our culture. So all bad. And I don't know how you push back against it constructively. I push,
fair,
right?
Right.
Is that constructive? I don't know.
And is that what you kind of, and one other part of the final part of the question was, you know, how do we encourage our wives, right, in that area? Right. How do we help our wives? They talked a lot about this fear factor. Mm-hmm. How do you help your wife overcome that? And if we're feeling it too, how do we overcome it? Right. So you get angry,
you
push back,
I push.
You do the Bruce Parker
the
thing.
Push. Yeah.
Right.
Try to make it funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the funny. But. Right. Rob, any thoughts?
I think empathizing with it in some ways too.
Yeah. Okay.
And just acknowledging, I'm frustrated as well. Or I don't know what I'm doing either. And we're just kind of making it up as we go along and hoping that we don't have to pay too many Dr. Phil bills. And so,
it's a good way to put it.
And that's part of the deal. And I know that no matter what we do, God has got the control over the whole thing.
Right.
And we have to remember his sovereignty in it. And that we can try our best and we can do what we think is the most effective thing for each individual kid biblically, but at the same time, God has to ultimately be the one who's in control there.
I just want to add something in complete love, right? All four of my children are in therapy and we've had mental health crises with three of them. No, but I just want to say, because I think that's a perfect thing. It's a perfect thing, right? The notion that bad things aren't going to happen, you have to let go of. Bad things are going to happen. So I've had hospital moments with several of them. I've had almost calling 911 moments with them. You know, there are the moments of extreme joy and extreme terror are both owned by my children. And so the notion of, like, is there something we're doing to mess them up? Is that why, you know, they lose their minds or attempt suicide or this or that? No.
Right.
Is it our genetics? Absolutely. Is it the curse? No doubt. Is it my responsibility? Is there something I could have done? And I think that's the insidious lie. And that's in love. I'm just trying to say,
no.
And I think it's a good point. Like, okay, do I feel like less of a dad because all four of my children are in therapy? Actually, no, because I finally realized they desperately need it. I probably do too, by the way. But I'm stubborn and I refuse to go. And anyways, that's a different story, different day, right? But I just think that we have to be very, very careful. And it's not about the stigma of mental health, which is a totally different one. It's the expectations that we allow for ourselves about if bad things happen, how do we allot that? How do you assign that? So I'm not trying to jump on you.
No.
Hopefully I didn't bother you. But it's something you have to figure out how to let go. And I think as dads, honestly, way easier for some reason, or at least in our house, way easier for me to let that go than the person over there. Way easier. And I kind of feel like that's my job, is to say, oh, no, yeah, psychiatric, in, you know, psychiatric ward is because of a series of circumstances that aren't to do with us parents.
All right.
I will push back on you just
Please,
a little bit.
Do.
Because I think it's both, actually. I mean, I can look back at my parents and they weren't perfect, right? I mean, they were great parents. I grew up, my parents loved me. I had never doubted that ever. But, you know, they didn't open the Bible, like it was never read at home. And so, you know, I kind of grew up in a more worldly home. And so, you know, looking back, there are some things and that my therapists have uncovered for me that, you know, stem from them.
Yep.
Likewise, I know that for each of my children, there are some things that I'm putting on them, have put on them, that in a sense are because of me, because of my brokenness. I am not the perfect parent, but fortunately we have a perfect parent.
Exactly.
And my job is to point them to him.
Right.
But in the midst of that, yes, I made mistakes. I make mistakes, but there is grace and forgiveness for that.
Amen.
And so we can't, as parents, we aren't supposed to shoulder that full responsibility.
Right.
You know, and for me, that's been, I think, the biggest struggle as I have grown in my faith, is letting go of that, this is all my fault. Every
right.
bad thing my kids do or every bad thing that happens to them is my fault.
Right.
Because, A, that's not true. Probably the majority is not my fault, actually. But some of it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I need to own that and give that to God and ask for his
Much
forgiveness.
Better.
So let's talk about the relationship for a second, right? You've got a relationship with your wife, you've got a relationship with God, and you've got a relationship with your kids. How do you balance that? Or do you balance it, right? I mean, I guess that's the
yeah.
other thing. As
that's
men
a,
of
yeah.
faith,
that's
right?
Right?
We all profess we know Christ, some more than others. No, just kidding. That was good.
That was good.
That is true, actually, though.
Well,
right?
I'm just,
no, I mean,
true.
Seriously, like
I'm poking the bear.
We're all in different stages of our walk.
Of
right?
course.
So
no. Agreed. But
I'm the youngest one here. I can tell you that.
But but how does that influence your overall relationship with your kids, with your wife? Were there times that should have influenced and didn't? You know, I guess that's where I'm trying to go with this question.
It took me a long time to kind of unpack. And again, it's back to the only reason I jumped on your comment, hopefully you're all good with me, but that lie from the culture is really interesting. So we're asked to pick up our cross and carry it daily, right? So we have to give up our lives to follow Christ. And I think we all, at least we've heard that enough times probably, that it's like, oh yeah, I get that. And then the model as husbands with our wives is we should be willing to give up our lives for our wives, right? Like that's, Paul's very clear on that. Okay, got it. So culture would say, and of course you do that for your children. Where's that in the Bible? Oh, it's not. Oh, that's interesting. So the world here, our world, has inverted all of that. And I think, you know, we put all kinds of things in front of our faith. We put all kinds of things in front of our marriages. And we've let our children sort of take over both in a way that is a lie, right? And the enemy's very, very good at this. Takes truth, absolute truth, and just tweaks it enough that it messes with us very effectively for a very long time. That's the angle of somebody who's smart and devious. So I think from my perspective, the issue is, no, you got to reverse all that. It's exactly what James was talking about. you make Christ central, then presumably he will help you hold on to your marriage, and then you'll be able to withstand the things that happen to you vis-a-vis your children. That's the correct ordering of things. That's what he said, and that's what Paul said, and that's what the rest of the scripture
So how
said.
Do you do that? How do you keep Christ the center? Mr. Almost PhD.
Yeah, that's right.
I think part of it will have to always be your individual relationship with Christ and continuing to focus on that, continuing to build that, and not to go cliche, but building off what you said, denying yourself, taking up your cross and following him and doing that on a daily basis. And that it has to be a daily struggle of self-denial and embracing Christ. And
yeah, but I'm busy, right? I got three kids under six, right? I'm juggling all this stuff.
Right, but you're not going to be able to have three kids under six and do it effectively if you don't get this right to begin with.
Okay. Yeah. I agree. And I think a big part of that for us, absolutely we have to focus on our individual walk, but our individual walk cannot truly be full without community. And they touched on it a little bit a couple weeks ago, but that has been by far the biggest blessing in our life has been the community, you know, at this church, at our kids' schools, even at our jobs, that God has surrounded us with to really help us. And when you have those times where you're really struggling with how to parent a child, there is no greater resource than the people in this church who've had kids who've gone through similar stuff. I can't tell you, I mean, even just last week we met with a couple in our community group and just talked about stuff going on with our kids and prayed for each other. And then after, it was like our hearts were just totally different after that.
Yeah, I think the message is you are not alone. You may think you are on an island because that's where Satan wants to put you, but you are not alone. Agreed?
Yeah,
I think the best thing, and Lisa and I have talked about this several times, one of the best things I ever did at an older church, I started meeting with some men, and these guys were 10, 15 years my senior. And my kids were all, you know, early teenage, not even teenager yet. These guys all had kids that had put them through the ringer. Right? One guy had a daughter that was in jail. But I came home and told Lisa that it was actually the most encouraging time with them because they were still standing, right? Yeah. They had been put through hell, but they were still standing. And so I know I said the word. I know, I'm sorry. Anyway, Lisa did it last time, so I get to do it this time, right?
Cracked the seal.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah. Anyway, but the point being is the community, I think, is huge, right? Building that community, whether it's in this church or other churches or whatever, for men, the mentoring element, and you can call it mentoring, you can call it friendship, you can call it fellowship, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, right, there are people out there that have all been through it, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, can tell you all about it, and to me, that was encouraging. That helped me through the times where I was like, right?
Yeah, and along those lines, so John Deal, who's sitting right back there.
Woohoo!
You want to wave, John? So John mentored me. We met, we were going through a really tough time. We met weekly for almost 2 years. And he just really poured life into me. And since that time, we've started our Thursday morning men's group. So if any of you guys are looking for something, we meet Thursday mornings at 6:30 here, from 6:30 to 7:30. That's just been a huge blessing for me for the very reasons that you mentioned. There's guys of all ages in there and people going through stuff and have been through stuff. And, you know, just really encouraging each other is a huge thing, I think.
All right. So let's talk. Well, let me ask another one. Any particular aha moments in fatherhood? Just total surprise.
No? You get two for flinching. You get two for flinching. Particularly, and I know everybody likes talking about teenagers, but even with what I think of as terrorists, toddlers, you know, you can't negotiate with them. You can't let them see or smell fear, right? Like you just gotta stand firm. And it's something I view my role, partially personality, is I should operate at the extremes. Trisha has more threat surface. There's more, you know, she's with them more often. They can get to her more easily. I kind of bop in, I bop out. I travel too much. I work too, you know, I'm just there for shorter periods of time. And so they can't really get in my head the same way. And there's a big part of the way kids are that I now understand that I didn't at all have any context for, where, well, God lets us, no free will, predestination conversation, you know, throw that away. God lets us define the relationship with him in some way, right? And so we can be close, we can be far, we can be whatever. And he created us, he needed us together. These are people that just showed up at our house one day. So this, you know, it's a close relationship. Well, I was partially involved, but anyway. So we're close to them, but we're nowhere near how God is. And God allows there to be this, like, okay, you figure it out and come to me. And so, like, there's a real sense in which we need to be, I think, somewhat able to do that, which is hard. And so, like, to me, it boils down to, okay, well, if they do something weird and teeny, which they do, you get two for flinching, right? Like, if you freak out when they freak out, now you're going to get another one. You're going to get something else. And you don't want that, whatever that was, right? The two that you got, or the disrespect, or the whatever. It's like, nope, I'm above it. You're down there. I'm over here. Stop it. I sometimes describe it as a referee shirt and a whistle, right? Like, everybody out. And so to me, that notion of I can love them desperately, I can be willing to do anything for them, and yet there's this gap between me and them that has to be there, that is the definition of health in many respects, even in the world's eyes, that's strange to me. Like, the best way to help them is to back away. Mm-hmm. That's counterintuitive, but critical. And, like, now I'm a big fan of, nope, you hit me, I'm not going to hit you back, I'm not going to flinch, I'm going to stay in right here and tell you, stop it and go to your room.
Well, and you mentioned teenagers. That's always a hot topic. Now, Rob, you don't have teenagers yet.
They're coming.
Yeah.
You've gone down the teenager route.
In the midst of it.
You're in the and in the midst of it, right?
Three of them, yes.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So,
three of them. Wait, And two of them are girls.
Oh,
yeah.
So, oh, moment of silence.
Which is, yeah. It's just hard. I think that's one thing I think I've been surprised by, is just how hard, you know, Andy says, like, he still doesn't understand Julie, and I still don't understand Stephanie that well, but I really don't understand my girls at all. I mean, I just don't get it. And so it's so much easier for Stephanie to interact with them. So it's sort of both. Like, that's been my biggest surprise, is just how clueless I am when it comes to them, which doesn't mean that I just give up, right? I still have to be there and engage and try to understand the best that I can, but it just doesn't happen.
Okay. All right. Well, we are almost out of time. So one last question, right? Advice, right? If these guys are all sitting there, all different age groups, oh, the whole nine yards, right? So think about one thing that you would want to get across to them. Just, it could be tactical. It could be spiritual. And I'll go first to give you a little more time.
There we go. Right? Nice.
One of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from an old pastor or maybe his wife. Anyway, the point was, your role as a parent is not to have the best behaved 8-year-old. Because those kids are hell on wheels, right? See, I said it twice. Your job as a parent, right? Love the Lord and have a well-adjusted, functioning adult. To me, that removed a lot of that fear early on, especially in those pre-teen years where, oh, little Johnny's not acting right at the grocery store and I'm a bad parent. That was one of those things I was able to go, that's not the goal, right? That's not what I'm trying to do. So, gave you plenty of time.
Yeah, I think for me, it would definitely be the spiritual aspect of it, that focusing on my relationship. I wish I had done that earlier, my relationship with Christ. And and not just the head knowledge. You know, I think this church is really good at head knowledge, but really having that experience of God, like not just knowing about God, but knowing God in a personal way.
Okay. Bruce, Rob, anybody?
Sure. I've got my funny little expressions. So God doesn't have grandchildren. And that one hurts a lot. Because I know for a fact that two of my children really struggle with their relationship with the Lord, if you would even say they have one. And I've watched, growing up here, been here 30 years or more, actually. There are a lot of kids that we hung out with back when I was here as a kid that aren't here anymore and don't follow the Lord. And then there are all kinds of stories since. So that notion that you have to kind of, you know, let them find their way to the Lord is hard, super, super hard. And it was, we thought, okay, well, if they're in Awanas, and in particular, if they get all the badges in Awanas, then yeah, and we have one, you get all the badges, but now we're not so sure where exactly he's at. To me, it's really, really tough to put your hopes in your children's anythings, how they turn out academically or professionally, or even, and this is the harder one, spiritually. And I think there's a big part of this where if they can see how you rely on the Lord in both their struggles and your own struggles,